Sivasivaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Okay, so let's see. So I thought of actually I was preparing for maybe talking about how the universe was created and how Brahma would come up from the lotus and found himself and meditated and then all the planets came into being. But then I thought but actually it's Kartik. And there's a special Leela going on, and it would not be nice to not pay respect to the Leela, which is in our tradition very important. So that's why I thought, okay, anyway, despite all I wanted to say, I took the way back and thought, okay, let's just talk about what is very important in this month, which is the Damodara Leela. And you all know about it. Actually, who's first time here today? First time, two people are first time, very good. Three, very good. But you have been in the temple before? You have been in the temple before? So you are really the first time ever you came in contact with something like this. First time, cool. But you're from Berlin? Okay, good. So I try to make it as simple as possible in case it's, you can always stop me down, slow me down, repeat and all that stuff if I go off in my mind too quickly and too much. Good. So, usually I was about to, as I said, but then I found a very nice verse which is describing the mood of this month. And which is describing the mood of the Damodara Leela, or the mood of Kartik. And I found that one in Srimad Bhagavatam. And as you know, we usually read from Bhagavad Gita, so all respects to Bhagavad Gita. This is not to diminish the quality, and I swear on Bhagavad Gita, I try to stay in the line of Bhagavad Gita. But since now I have this verse, I want to read that out for you. It's from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto. Chapter 6, verse 18. So I read that out. The great sage Narada said, my dear Maharaj Yudhishthira, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is always ready to help you. He is your master, guru, he is God, he is a very dear friend, and the head of your family. Yet sometimes he agrees to act as your servant or as your order carrier. You are greatly fortunate because this relationship is possible only in Bhakti Yoga. It's an interesting point. So the Lord can give liberation or mukti very easily, but he does not very easily give one Bhakti Yoga, because by that process he is bound to the devotee. And the word bound is binding, therefore it comes. So because he's bound to the devotee. So I'll read the purport by Srila Prabhupada, which is a very good one. This passage is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 5.6.18, while Sugadev Goswami was describing the character of Rishabdev. He distinguished between Bhakti Yoga and liberation by reciting this verse. In relationship with the Yadus and the Pandavas, the Lord acted sometimes as their master, sometimes as their advisor, sometimes as their friend, and sometimes as the head of their family, and sometimes even as the servant. Krishna once had to carry out an order of Yudhishthira by carrying a letter to Yudhishthira had written to Duryodhana regarding peace negotiations. Similarly, he also became the chariot driver of Arjuna. This illustrates that in Bhakti Yoga, there is a relationship established between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the devotee. Such a relationship is established in transcendental mellows, known as Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. Different moods in which we can have a relationship. If a devotee wants simple liberation, he gets it very easily. Wow. Also be a good desire here and there. gets it very easily by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as confirmed by Bilgamangat Thakur. Because he says, for a devotee, liberation is not very important because it is always standing on the doorstep waiting to serve him in some way. So a devotee therefore must be attracted by the behavior of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. It's also a good one. So the devotee therefore must be attracted by the behavior of the devotees of Vrindavan, who live in relationship with Krishna. The land, water, cows, trees, flowers, they serve Krishna in Shantaras, or they have passive relationship to Krishna, not an interacting one so much. His servants, they serve him in Dasyaras, and his cowherd friends, they serve him in Sakyaras. Similarly, the elder gopis and gopas, they serve Krishna as father or mother. Yashoda. That's what this month is all about. Serve him as father and mother, as uncle or other relatives. And the young gopis, the cowherd girls, they serve Krishna in conjugal love. So while executing devotional service, one must be naturally inclined to serve Krishna in one of these transcendental relationships. That is the actual success of life. For a devotee, to get liberation is not very difficult. Even one who is unable to establish a relationship with Krishna can achieve liberation by merging into the Brahman effulgence. This is called Sayujya Mukti. Vaishnavas usually never accept Sayujya Mukti. Although sometimes they accept the other forms of liberation, namely Sarupya, Salokya, Samipya, and Shashti. A pure devotee, however, does not accept any kind of mukti. He wants only to serve Krishna in a transcendental relationship. This is the perfectional stage of spiritual life. So, one time the verse again. The great sage Narada Muni said, "My dear Maharaj Yudhishthira, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is always ready to help you. He is your master, guru, God, very dear friend, and head of your family. Yet sometimes he agrees to act as your servant or order carrier. You are greatly fortunate because this relationship is possible only in Bhakti Yoga. The Lord can give liberation, mukti, very easily, but he does not very easily give bhakti yoga, because by that process he is bound to the devotee. So, in order to tune in into the Damodar Lila, who of you know the Damodar Lila? Or who would not know the Damodar Lila? Who is it? Two? Okay, cool. Three. Okay. So let me just read in very brief what this Damodar Lila is all about by Srila Prabhupada. He gives an introduction in the 10th canto, 9th chapter, when this Lila is actually taking place. And I just it's just 1 minute. That for all of you who don't know about this Lila and the intricacies, I want to read that out, okay? So one day, the maidservants, being engaged in other work, Mother Yashoda was churning the yogurt into butter herself. And in the meantime, Krishna came and requested her to allow him to suck her breast milk. Of course, Mother Yashoda immediately allowed him to do so, but when she saw that the hot milk on the oven was boiling over, and therefore she immediately stopped allowing Krishna to drink the milk of her breast and went to stop the milk on the oven from overflowing. Krishna, however, having been interrupted in his business of sucking the breast, was very angry. He took a piece of stone and broke the churning pot and entered the room where he began to eat the freshly churned butter himself. When Mother Yashoda, after attending the overflowing milk, returned and saw the pot broken, she could understand that this was the work of Krishna. And therefore she went to search for him. When she entered the room, she saw Krishna standing on the ulukal, this is the mortar, which is a large mortar for grinding spices. Having turned the mortar upside down, he was stealing butter hanging from a swing and was distributing the butter to the monkeys. As soon as Krishna saw that his mother had come, he immediately began to run away, and Mother Yashoda began to follow him. After going some distance, Mother Yashoda was able to catch Krishna, who, because of his offense, was crying. Mother Yashoda, of course, threatened to punish Krishna if he acted this way again, and she decided to bind him with a rope. You know that story, but she was trying to bind him with a rope. Unfortunately, when the time came to the knot, the rope with which she wanted to bind Krishna was short by a distance of 2 fingers, 2 inches. When she made the rope longer by adding other ropes, she again saw that it was actually short 2 fingers. Again and again she tried, and again she found that the rope was too short by 2 fingers. Thus she became very tired, and Krishna, seeing his affectionate mother so tired, allowed himself to be bound. Now being compassionate, he did not show her his unlimited potency. So after Mother Yashoda bound Krishna and became engaged in other household affairs, Krishna observed 2 Yamal Arjun trees, which were actually Nala Kuvara and Manigriva, 2 sons of Kuvara, who had been condemned by Narada Muni to become trees. Krishna, by his mercy, began to proceed towards the trees to fulfill the desire of Narada Muni. Okay, that's the next Leela. Then we go into the next period. Then he was delivering the 2 trees. Probably heard about that, but let's stick to the Leela. Good. So because what I thought is, you know, when you read these Leelas, what is coming up in your mind? What do you think about? Like, what does it inspire you with? Or where do you see yourself? You know, how can you relate this in your life practically? Or what does the Leela do with you in your heart? How does it touch you? Which points would you, you know, recall in your daily life? So, therefore, I'm asking you first. What is it, you know, who knows a very nice point which inspires each of you, maybe not each of you, in that Leela? You know, what is it, what attracts you? What would you, you know, what would you recommend meditating upon to somebody else? What do you say?
I like this because it's without awe and reverence. That is very unconventional and very very human also.
Very good point. So he likes it because it is very human-like. It is not like, it is not human, but it is human-like. It's true. So it reminds us that the relationship we can have with God is not always necessarily in awe and reverence, like God is the Almighty up in the sky, and He's the one punishing us for our sins, and He's the one who's providing if we pray that we want to have our daily bread, and He's the one who's sich in Versuchung führt, and so on and so forth. That's a good point. So the way we can interact with God is very different and can be very intimate, very private, very, you would say, loving, even so much so that you might forget that God is God. Yeah, it's a good point, very good point. Who has another point? Yeah, the microphone has to be passed around. What is it?
Yes, thank you. A very nice point in this story is that not only Krishna is very personal towards every soul, he's connecting with every soul, but also the devotees of Krishna also connect with Krishna in a very personal way.
That's true.
So Mother Yashoda was feeding Krishna the milk, but she thought in herself, in her meditation, Actually, Krishna should not only take milk, he should also take butter, he should also make yogurt and this and that. And she was preparing it on the flame. So when the milk started to boil over, she thought, actually this milk is serving Krishna, and now this milk will fall into the fire and will be burned and destroyed. So I should save the milk. And also in this way, the milk can serve Krishna. So then she put Krishna aside and went to save the milk. Who was going to serve Krishna? So in the spiritual sense, everyone is very personal. So our relationship to Krishna is very personal, but also every devotee should try to engage others in Krishna's service and help others to serve Krishna.
That's a very good point. Also, engaging the others is a very good point. I will come to that because it's the principle of para upakara. When she actually engaged all the village gopis to provide rope, because she realized, you know, she ran out of rope, and then she thought like, okay, I don't have much rope in my home, so let me just go to all the houses and ask the other gopis to engage as well in the service to, you know, trying to bind Krishna. So that is a good point. It's a very good point. Okay.
One nice point is that Krishna is bound by love, can be bound by love.
You can hardly bind him otherwise. It's a good point there, he's bound by love. And the purer the love, the easier he's bound. And that's why he's not giving that easily away, because he knows he has to obey that love. Love rules in the spiritual world. That's a good point.
I like the Leela, but I like more this description of what our previous great Vaishnava did. For example, Damodarashtaka, it touched my heart so much.
The song.
The song, it's very beautiful.
We'll come to that song later. It's a beautiful one, yeah. It's been sung since many, many, many hundreds and probably thousands of years. It's very good. Cool. Yeah, what I like also very much is this intimacy. And actually, Yashoda is interacting with Krishna in this rasa called Vatsalya rasa. Now, Prabhupada was explaining this in the purport. Vatsalya rasa is the rasa where you can become a parent of God. When I heard this the first time, I thought like, wow, this is mind-blowing. I mean, how can I become a parent? How can anybody become a parent of God? Because growing up in the Western world, we would say, if we think of a relationship with God, it is, you know, very distant. It is very much in a serving mood, you know, like he orders me something to do and I am probably responding as best as I can. Probably I'm too sinful to even be able to respond, but anyway, that would be most what is possible. So when I heard that there is actually intimacy possible with God, then somehow that changed my perception of what could be, what spiritual life can be all about, because it's all about intimacy. And Vatsalya, actually the word Vatsa, who knows where this comes from Sanskrit?
It's a calf.
Yeah, actually true. It is a calf. It is a little cow. Because the Acharyas, Vishwana Chakravarti Thakur, he says, if we observe the relationship a mother has to its calf, this is very intimate and it comes closest to the meaning of Vatsalya as a mood, as a rasa. And like the loving affection a mother cow is giving her a calf, is coming very close to this, you know, it's actually the highest form of mother, you know, child affection we'll see in our world, like that. So this is a, there's also a therapy I was reading as a therapy if you are in the, you know, if people have a bit of a psychosis, if they're not really balanced, they are being put with a little calf, in a calf therapy. They just have the interaction with the calf for many, many days, for many, many weeks. And because the calf is very affectionate, it will create a relationship. And it creates a relationship with you in such a way that you'll be able to overcome some imbalances like that. So maybe you can try and find a calf in Berlin in case you have somebody or yourself some imbalances. So like that. So actually, God... What I also like very much is the point that God is very intimate, so much so that in his Goloka Vrindavan, or in in his Vrindavan mood, he doesn't want to be the controller. He just doesn't like to be. Imagine yourself of Bill Gates. You know, you have some guy who everybody knows. You know, if he would come somewhere, everybody would be, oh, look at this guy. This is Bill Gates. Let's take a picture. You know, and then people would like run after him. They want to sign. You know, they want to have a signature and an autograph. They want to, you know, they want to touch his feet. Maybe they want to talk to him. So everybody would be, wherever he would move, he would not be incognito. Basically, he would be observed by everyone. And he could not really, you know, he can just show one side of himself. But once he's home and he's with his family members, you know, then he's a normal guy. And then his wife knows that actually, you know, he has a weakness for sweets. And his wife knows he has a weakness for certain television show. Nobody outside knows. I mean, if somebody else would know that he has this weakness, you know, they would kind of, you know, make a whole newspaper article out of him, and they would drag him down and do this. But at home, he's another person. And at home, he doesn't like to be addressed as Bill Gates, the founder of Windows. You know, he would like to be addressed as Shatzi, you know, Sweeney, as baby, you know, all these things. Because there, he is displaying a more private, more intimate aspect of himself. As soon as he comes out and he is starting his working day and he has to arrange with his managers how things are going, stock market and this and that, then he has to be sharp again. He's in suit and tie. And then nobody can address him as Shanti, you know. Everybody has to address him as Mr. Gates, you know. May I, you know, and then he might respond. So in Vrindavan, in Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna doesn't want to be addressed as the one being the supreme controller. And so much so that he actually gives the task to Yogamaya, his internal potency, Yogamaya, that he actually makes, that Yogamaya makes his devotees forget about his supremacy. So Yogamaya has the task. By the way, we're always in illusion. There's never a moment we are not in illusion. We are in illusion here, bound by Mahamaya, and we are also in illusion in our, you would say, spiritual reality. But there we are in illusion by Krishna's internal, by Krishna's Yogamaya. And this illusion in the Vrindavan realm is making his devotees forget that he's actually God. It has to be, because as soon as Yashoda would realize, oh, he's the supreme control, she would not be able to play the role of a parent anymore, because she would immediately switch into the role of, oh, you know, oh, he's okay, let me pay my obeisances, let me make puja for him or something. So she could not interact in the Vatsalya Ras anymore. And actually, even further, he also gives Yogamaya the task that even Yogamaya makes him forget. So even he wants to forget that he is God, because if he would still remember that he is God, then the Leela would also not work perfectly. So he also needs to be, in a way, forgetful about that actually he's the supreme controller. Of course, at the same moment he knows he's Achintya. His Achintya Shakti is the inconceivable Shakti, that at the same time he also knows that he's the supreme controller. But for that moment of interaction, of experiencing this Vatsalya Ras, for him, he also needs to forget that he's the supreme controller. Otherwise, what's the use? Where's the ananda? Where's the prema? The prema can only be established if there is this perfection in that interaction in this rasa. So Prabhupada talks in this purport about four main rasas. He talks about this Shanta Ras. Actually, that's the first one. Let's say we have five. The first one is a more neutral one. Remember, I said there was a more passive one. Mm. This is when, you know, stone, water, you are plant, cow. Certain beings in the spiritual realm, which are pure of consciousness, they do have a certain passive way of interacting with the supreme being. Because not everybody, because we are all individuals. And as individuals, not everybody wants to stay on the spot always. Not everybody wants to play in the first row. So there is a way for those who want to play second row to have a more passive way of interacting with the Supreme. But this passive relationship is not so much stressed in our philosophy. Actually, it starts with Dasya Ras. And Dasya Ras is, who knows that Dasya Ras? You were the first time here, you know that, that's good.
Actually, I'm from India.
Ah, you're from India, okay, well then you know. So what means that Dasya Ras?
Lord Hanuma has shown towards Ram.
Exactly, exactly. So Das means a servant. Yeah? So we sometimes have names like Bhagavad Dhamma Das. That means the servant of that person or that principle. Yeah? Or Krishna Chaitanya Das, Maitreya Muni Das. Yeah? So that's good. So Das means a servant, and Dasya Ras is the rasa where you actually have an interaction with God in a very serving-like way. That is what we know here in the West. You know, we have God Almighty somewhere up there, and we are down here. And if we want to approach Him, then we can only do this by serving Him. But that is just one way. The next rasa, which is explained by Prabhupada in the purport, is the rasa of, who knows, what will be the next one? Sakya Ras. Sakya Ras. So who knows what Sakya Ras is? Chaitanya-ji. Sakya-ras. Almost. Sakya's friendship. So that is when Krishna enacts with his souls in a friendship-like way. So, as Prabhupada said, when Krishna enacts with his servants as gopas, they play with him, you know, they go out with the cows on the pasturing grounds, they play certain boyish games. And also they forget that actually God is God. They have to forget, because otherwise how can you, you know, play? And then we have the next rasa, which is called the Vatsalya Rasa, when we can interact with God in a parental way. And above that, or beyond that, or surpassing that, you would say we would have also the rasa called Madhurya Rasa, which is the conjugal love, which is a very intimate, loving, conjugal loving relationship. This is what the gopis experience with God. So what I always thought, firstly, we said, here we thought, if we can approach God as more in a serving way, and then you all know this approach when you think like, in transcendence there's no relationship. Huh? So I remember like, when I started a bit on my quest, couple of years back, I thought like, yeah, actually, in the material world, we have all sorts of relationships, we can interact, we have friends, we have girlfriends, boyfriends, but in the transcendental realm, there's no, you know, we surpass that, we don't need that. So, and when I heard, but well, actually, on the transcendental platform, there's still a relationship going on, but not in the way we interact due to, you know, whatever, sometimes we have anger, sometimes we have greed, sometimes there's jealousy. So the relationships we try to establish on this level we are, they are limited to the way of purity they can reach. But in a transcendental sense, the relationship between God and His servants, they can be without any material contamination, if you want to say so.
Sorry, I don't want to interrupt you.
No, no, it's good, it's fine.
But Prabhupada writes, the purport, there are five relationships, right?
Yeah.
Can you explain the active and passive part near...
the active and passive part? Huh?
Yes, yeah, so I don't understand what you mean with the...
Passive.
Passive, yes. Passive. So what is the relationship? Yeah. There's no relationship, but...
The active part is where you really interact with God.
Yes.
You talk with Him, you play with Him, like you do here, in a way. It's human-like.
If somebody believes in God, or to God, or
yeah.
There's something higher, mighty power,
yeah.
Take it like Buddha, like God, energy. Is it an active part or is it a passive part?
Well,
what is the meaning of this?
Yeah.
I don't understand the active part. Also, can you explain it?
Okay.
Clearly?
Yeah. Okay. Hold on. I get your point.
Just explain it.
Yeah. It's okay. So what you're saying? If you want to come to what some Buddhists call Nirvana, or what some impersonalists call the Brahman, then of course it is a very passive part, because there's supreme inactivity. you would say. There's not much going on. There is absence from fear. There is absence from anxiety of birth, death, old age, and disease. So it is, there is something. It's not that there's, well, actually there's nothing. It's just an impersonal way of existing, an inactivity. You would say in a sort of a, just imagine yourself, you're sleeping, you're dreaming, but you're not waking up. You don't experience anything painful there, maybe, but you also do not experience much happiness going on. So therefore, this impersonal, you would say, platform of existence is limited because you cannot interact. The soul's capacity is to interact with one another, and the soul's capacity is also to interact with the Supreme Soul. And because that capacity is there, therefore we are meant to actually go in a more active relationship. That doesn't mean that you cannot do. You can also, by desire, you can also stay inactive. But the soul has an inherent capacity. But the soul has an inherent capacity for personal active relationship with the Supreme. This is what Rupa Goswami actually explains, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Jivadharma. But this is, there's an inherent capacity for personal interactivity and actually for a loving Madhurya Ras conjugal relationship. So that is the thing. Love binds. I mean, love connects. You know, if you have friends, you know, you throw a party, you love the people who come, that connects. But love also binds. Coming back to Bill Gates, if the wife knows his weaknesses, then actually, you know, he's vulnerable by the weaknesses his wife knows, right? So therefore, he would not tell his weaknesses to just anybody, but he would actually keep it in the very intimate space amongst those people he can trust. You know? So in the same way, if the Lord reveals his innermost part of his personality, he would only do this in a realm where he's trusting that those who are hearing, seeing it, they will not misuse. Because it is showing some sort of vulnerability. Not vulnerability that the Lord is, you know, has a weakness there, but vulnerability in the sense he's showing his full personality. And therefore, you know, remember in this verse, it said one can very easily get mukti, but he's not very easily giving that part of bhakti, that pure love, because by that process he is bound to the devotee, because he's in a way selling himself. No? So therefore he is vulnerable, and therefore he's choosing wisely to whom he's giving that gift. So it's not that everybody just like this gets it cheap. So that is also a part which I like very much. So, and actually in this, or another part, you know, we said human-like. Because we know we interact with one another, so the acharyas actually say, our spiritual preceptors, they say, we can only experience this in this realm where we live, because it is there in the absolute form. So we can only experience loving attraction, friendship, you know, parental affection, because it is actually there in its original form, in a spiritual quality. And because it is there in a spiritual place, but the spiritual place is not like over there, so it's not location-wise, but because it is there in its pristine original form, we can experience this in that realm here. But because it is touched by what I said, the Mahamaya potency, Shakti, therefore these qualities might not be as pure. And therefore, you know, there's a passionate loving relationship, and you know, they love each other to a maximum, and then at some point, all of a sudden, they hate each other. And then you feel like, yeah, but you just loved each other. And next moment, it turns into, you know, a hate war, Rosenkrieg kind of thing. Right? Because it said that whenever these five rasas are distorted or absent, then so-called seven sub rasas show up. And one of the sub-rasas are bashfulness or grausamkeit of Deutsch. So that means whenever there's whenever there's not this pure loving affection, but when this is absent, then actually this grausamkeit can take place as well. And this also takes place in the relationship with Krishna and his servants, but in a very pure form. So it is not destructive, but it's actually enhancing again the love on another level. Because here we see if two people are fighting, then it becomes very destructive. Then it's about money, it's about the rights, who can see the child, it's about who gets the house, about who gets the car, it's about who gets the bank account, right? But it is in a spiritual world, there is no sense of destructivity, but it is more enhancing even the rasa. Go ahead.
This is just a question, but related to my personal life.
Yeah, there's a microphone, sorry.
This is a question related to my personal life, and you were speaking about that. My sister, she was super in love, they got married, they had a kid,
right.
And now they got divorced, and
yeah.
Like the husband, ex-husband,
yeah.
Like has a lot of hate,
yeah.
And he says all the time, I want to destroy you, and he's like doing stuff,
exactly.
Not good, you know? And in my position, I want to help, but I get angry, and I said no. Don't follow this anger, stuff like that. So,
yeah.
How can I, or like, can I help? Or I just should let it be and get it distracted? And then,
yeah. It's a good question. How much you want to involve in a war and in a battle like this? Because sometimes, you know, the messenger gets also shut down, so
yeah.
You don't want to burn your fingers too much, yeah? It's hard for me to answer because you know your sister more than I do, so you know them better, you know. So in a way, I would interact if I have my brother in a situation like this. I would try something, but if I feel that this is coming too close, then you also sometimes have to observe from a distance, let them fight the battle and later on interact again. It's hard to say. That you might have to contemplate and see in your own life how much you want to and how much you are allowed to, because sometimes also they want to do the battle amongst themselves, and if somebody else comes in, then it's maybe not the right choice. Has to be seen. So, but let's go a bit further. Krishna has 64 qualities and Vishnu actually has 60. There are four qualities Krishna is only displaying in his Vrindavan Leela. In the Leela where we have Yashoda right now with Krishna doing the baby thing, you know, breastfeeding, milk churning over. In this realm of reality, Krishna has four specific qualities. He's not showing in any Vishnu form. He's not showing as a supreme controller. He's only showing when Bill Gates is home, right? When he's in his... So who knows one of those four qualities? Okay.
He's surrounded by loving friends.
There you go. He's surrounded by his loving friends, which is called Prema Madhuri. Prema Madhuri. That means he's surrounded by his most intimate friends. They are so close to him that they reach the level, you know, our acharyas say of Mahabhav. And Mahabhav, to talk simple, is a very high level of Prema. It's the highest of the seven stages of Prema, which is pure affection, is an intoxifying, is a most delightful way of interacting. So it's called Mahabhav, and that's true. Prema Madhuri is his loving associates.
He's Rupa Madhuri.
Rupa Madhuri.
Which means his form
right.
Is so sweet, like a tree which is full of fruits. It's bending
down.
So much sweet, he's bending.
Rupa Madhuri. Very beautiful, yeah. It's Rupa Madhuri, so he's the most attractive there. He's the sweetest. You know, as Vishnu, I don't know who of you have been in South India. Are you from South India? South India, you know, there's a lot. Vishnu is there in Sri Rangam. Huh? He has a huge, beautiful murti, you know, where he lays on Anandashesh. And it's very beautiful. I've been there personally and I like it very much. But there, you know, there is with Krishna when he is playing the flute, when he's having his beautiful curly hairs, then there's some sort of Rupa Madhuri, some beautifulness, some beauty he's not displaying in this Vishnu form. You know? He just makes the discrimination to say, okay, if I come as Vishnu, I have other tasks to do. But my Rupa Madhuri form I show in my Goloka Vrindavan realm. Okay, we have two left. Who knows another one? Oh, there was one. Yeah. It's a flute. It's called Venu Madhuri. Exactly. He plays the flute only in his Vrindavan Leelas. He's not playing the flute as Vishnu. You know, why would he have a flute as, you know, Mahavi Vishnu doing the job? He's not bringing out the instrument. But Venu Madhuri is a quality of Krishna. When he plays the flutes, the stones are melting and all the gopis become mad. All his servants, they forget about whatever was so urgent right now, and they're just following the sound of his flute. Actually, it's said that all his millions and billions of cows, they all have a name, and he's playing a certain tune on his flute, and the exact cow knows that she's actually being called by him through the flute, by a specific tune he's playing, like that. So this is called Venu Madhuri. And there's one left. That is actually the Leela Madhuri form. And I also already said that he's enacting certain pastimes only in this Vrindavan realm. Like we have the Damodar Leela, you know, where he is a baby and he has Mother Yashoda been caring for him as a parent. He's not doing this somewhere else. This Leela is only in his intimate realm. But don't think of it in a way, this is just a very small village. Because we think like, okay, this is just, maybe there's just a few people in and how do I ever get in there? You know, if you go to the Amritsam, then you have to put a number, and then you have to wait there. And then at some point they call your number and then you can finally get in and sit on the counter to offer your garland. And then you have to go out again. Because actually the Leela has already taken place and you are not really meant to be there. No, actually, Krishna is Achintya Shakti, and his Achintya Shakti makes it possible that he is, you know, parting himself, is called Swayam Prakash, and a vollständige Teilerweiterung. He is dividing himself so that every part of him is as good as the whole. So he can, in a way, part himself in billions and billions of forms and enact individually with everybody there and in the most perfect way. So he's not losing quality by, you know, expanding himself in different forms. This is his Achintya Shakti. So there are many Leelas when the, you know, if you read in Chaitanya Charitamrita when there was Ratha Yatra and he had 7 kirtan groups all playing different, like he had 6 people singing and 6 people in the core responding and then the whole crowd of thousands of people responding. So there was a whole setup. But Chaitanya set that up very perfectly. 7 kirtan groups. And he was expanding 7 times and he was dancing in each kirtan group so that the devotees being in the kirtan group, they thought he's just dancing with us. So they were oblivious about Lord Chaitanya being also in the other group and being here, they were just thinking, okay, now he's just with us. So in the same way, when the gopas and the gopis there, when they are enacting with Krishna, then he is arranging in such a way that they think like, he's just with me right now. So in that same way, if you at some point go into your most loving spiritual form and have a relationship with him, then you can be assured he will be there just for you. So there is no shortage in the way of interacting. There is no less quality because he's already engaged with somebody else and he might spend 5 minutes time for you because you're also here. But he's there for you 108%. Actually, Prabhupada Saraswati, he says in one of his books, he says, there is a Radha and Krishna in every kunja. And there are millions and millions of kunjas and palaces, and another millions and millions of kunjas of for all the manjaris and gopis and servants and so on and so forth. So there's unlimited space. There's no limit to the spiritual realm. And as we know, the creation materially and spiritually wise is actually ever expanding. So it is an ever expanding realm which has no limitations. And Krishna with his Achinta Shakti makes it possible that whatever the devotees desire and he is desiring will manifest somebody or other. That's a bit of a go ahead, Prabhupada.
So should Krishna be my friend or should he be my master?
Ah, that's a good question. If I would be to answer, I would really ruin your spiritual life. You know, that is something which is not, you know, prematurely being decided by us, you would say. It can be decided by the grace of your spiritual master, spiritual teacher, if he has an insight in that spiritual realm and if he sees you. It can also be that the Lord within your heart is revealing this to you at some point. And it is partially also to what is your natural inclination. Because, you know, you have a certain nature, and this nature is also creating certain desires with which Krishna is reciprocating. So if you are not so much good of a parent, and if you not really feel like, then maybe that is not something for you, but this is hard to say right now. We should not, with our mental understanding, try to find out what's best for me right now. Basically, Prabhupada said, especially in the beginning, it's good to chant carefully, listen to the Maha Mantra, and in time, these things will be revealed. And then it will be also revealed to with which spiritual master you might come in contact, who is giving you a more deeper guidance. And then at some point, maybe in this lifetime, it's advisable to do in this lifetime, then you at some point know by whatever kripa or mercy. So,
thank you, Professor.
Good. So, what do we have? I was just going off track big time, but okay. Two fingers. I want to read out one thing for you first, because I found a very nice document by Prabhupada where he reveals the real meaning of why Yashoda wanted to bind Krishna. What do you think? Why did Yashoda have the desire to bind him? It's a good point there. You know already.
That's what you say, don't you mind?
Yeah, but then, of course, spoil the party. Okay, that's the same.
Okay, can I spoil the party?
You can spoil the party.
Okay,
yeah,
please.
You have to.
Probably
also
microphone there.
Yeah, I know you have to.
You might think it's maybe to punish Krishna for his mischievous behavior.
Yeah.
But it's actually Mother Yashoda wanted to protect Krishna, because if he would go out in that state, out of the door, things might maybe could happen in disturbance, and she wanted to prevent this by binding him. So she actually wanted to protect Krishna from further disturbances.
Exactly. So, because we think like, oh, he broke the butter pot, you know, he disapproved him. So we think like, okay, she wants to punish him. Of course, you know, he needs to be punished. He cannot do this. But Prabhupada reveals, and that was exactly what you said, and I read this out for you, it's just a passage. Mother Yashoda wanted to bind Krishna not in order to chastise him, but because she thought that the child was so restless that he might leave the house in fear. That's a good point. That would be another disturbance, and therefore, because of full affection to stop Krishna from leaving the house, she wanted to bind him with a rope. Yeah. It's like what Bhagavad Dhamma said, she was thinking of the milk who was meant to serve him. So in every respect, there's his loving Prem Madhuri devotees, they always think of another way of, you know, having some loving affection for Krishna. So it's not about chastising. And then he says, Mother Yashoda wanted to impress upon Krishna that since he was afraid merely to see her stick, he would not perform such disturbing activities as breaking the container of yogurt and so on and so forth. Okay. So, but this is a good point to understand that she didn't want to chastise him, but she wanted to prevent him going out in that state of anxiety because he was afraid. And so she was more afraid that he would, you know, be helplessly lost somewhere else, and therefore let's rather bind him there. Otherwise he might do something stupid. Good. And then we have that point of two fingers. Remember, two fingers too short. Again, two fingers too short. She tried to find all the ropes in her house, two fingers too short. And then she did, by the way, Sankirtana. She went out to engage all the others. You know, she engaged all the other gopis. She went through the village and she was, you know, renting some ropes, but still two fingers too short again and again. And what does these two fingers stand for? Who knows? Could you be hard? Yeah. That is very important.
I guess often the discussion in between the Vaishnavas of what brings us to Krishna, our own endeavor or the mercy?
Good point.
And some say the mercy, some say our own endeavor. And it's actually both.
Yeah.
So as Lord Chaitanya said, it's both.
This is a very good point.
And this is represented by these two fingers.
Yeah, exactly. Kunjabihari Prabhupada said it nicely. These two fingers, they stand for two things. They stand for the bhakta-nishta and actually for svanishta. And bhakta-nishta is our own endeavor. That's, you know, we are going the extra mile. Whatever we put in, our own desire, and then actually Krishna's mercy, Krishna's kripa shakti. And there's also, it said, which finger is what? So, because one is taller than the other, right? So one is bigger in amount and the other one's a bit smaller. So who knows the bigger one?
Mercy.
That's the mercy. So ultimately, we cannot trick the Lord. Ultimately, he has to be merciful to us. That means we can try, and we should try our best, but still the last, you know, mercy part in that sense will come from Krishna. If he sees that we have done, that we have collected much rope of ourselves to try to bind him with our pure love, then he, out of his own free will, let him be bound by us that way. So what is the time? Do I still have it? So do I still have it? Is it already over? What's usually the time frame? Okay. A few more minutes, huh? Good. So I have a very nice, that's a very beautiful one. I have a very nice explanation of Vishwana Chakravarti Thakur. I don't know whether it is a bit too long, but however, later on, those of you who want to have this beautiful PDF, is about also Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains the different sthayi bhavas and the different stimulants of Vatsalya bhava. It's very beautiful. So if you want to dive deeper into the Damodar Leela, there's always plenty of room to go deeper. Huh? Maybe we don't do it now. But let's maybe stick to this one last principle, which is very nice, that actually she performed the Yuga Dharma. Because she went around the village and she was engaging all the other gopis. And that is a principle which we should also, which I personally find very inspirational. Because she was, you know, at some point she tried alone and she realized actually there's no chance, I can't do much by myself. So that should be also for us very important to understand how much we can do by our own endeavor. How much we can, you know, force ourselves, you know, or how much power we can generate, how much spiritual power we can generate just by our own. If we actually do not have the help of the other devotees, we do not break, can't come far, let's put it that way. You know, there's a saying, one match you can easily break, you have a bunch, then this is very hard to break. So in that sense, the principle or the idea of the age we are in is the congregational chanting, and the Sankirtan is actually two words. It is combined by the word Sangha, which means a congregation, and kirtan means to do the thing which helps the soul to get liberation in this age, which is the chanting of God's names. Actually, Rupa Goswami, he said that, Jiva Goswami in the Sandavas, he is talking about Panch Anga Bhakti. You heard about the Panch Anga Bhakti. There are 64 devotional activities which are described to be very good for us if we observe them. And from all these 64, it's always 64, and this number comes again, there are five which are very important, which are, you would say, even more important for us to do, or which we should stress or focus on specifically. So who knows those five principles? Who has heard about one?
What is it? Living in a holy place.
Living in a holy place is Dhamvas. Exactly. We are moving, let's say, we are living in Vrindavan, in Mayapur, and Jagannath Puri. A very good point. This is but also mentally, if we can't move there due to some reasons, we also can mentally at least move there. Who knows another one?
Salusanga,
very important. It's what we do right now. We come together to hear and chant and to inspire ourselves so that we, when we are home, we feel fully enlightened. Salusanga, very important. Who knows another one?
Bhagavad Shravanam.
Bhagavad Shravanam.
Which one? Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita.
Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, exactly. Who knows? There are two more. Yeah, that was actually, yeah, that is true. Actually, Srimurti Seva, which is the worship of the deities. And the last one is actually Harinam Sankirtan, which is the name. And Jiva Goswami said, you know, even if you, let's say, you have to combine all the other four angas with the Yuga Dharma in order to put or bring that into perfection, but the Yuga Dharma itself, sprich Sankirtan, in itself can bring already perfection. So if you live in the holy Dham, not performing Sankirtan, then you will not get perfection. If you worship your deities, but you are not engaging in Sankirtan, you also won't reach it. But if you only do Sankirtan and you are actually not performing the others of the Panch Anga Bhaktis, then you can already achieve that perfection. So there should be an inspiration. There are many kirtans. There's japa in that sense, which is what we do with ourselves when we are home, when we worship God in our own heart, when we can meditate about God's qualities, like we had now these four qualities, Venu, Madhuri. So if you chant your japa, you can meditate about these qualities. And then we come together to actually perform what we call a congregational chanting. Because the more voices together, the louder the call, and the more likely, you would say, the Lord might hear us in wherever he is, in our hearts, not up there in the sky, but in our hearts. So the group effort is very important, and this is, in my eyes, the main principle, what I like and what I actually try to practice in my own spiritual life too. Come together and do the congregational chanting of God's names. Cool. Yeah, so then we came to a natural end. There are definitely many more insights of the Dhammadalila, and we could go, you can find many more inspirations. So if you want to, I want to inspire you to really dive deep and find out what really inspires you. And I guess today we are also singing the song because you said that is what inspires you the most. So, do you guys have any more questions?
Sometimes in discussions.
Oh, yeah. But now we need the microphone. Yeah. Because,
Hi.
Hi.
People say sometimes in discussions there is no evidence for God.
Uh-huh.
So, how you will answer this question?
There's no evidence for God. Yeah, well, you see, this is a question which is...
Where's the evidence?
I mean, first of all, who says?
Atheists.
And how does anybody know that nobody on that planet has seen God? Have I asked everybody? Have I seen everybody? Can I really say that there's no God and nobody has seen God?
Maybe they haven't seen.
That is true. That might be so. Not everybody is able to see God, but that does not mean that nobody has ever seen God. So at least if there's one person having seen God, then this is already being refuted. Because that means somebody has seen God. He has made himself visible to one dedicated soul, and that means there is God.
So how we would answer that? You say, I haven't seen God, so where is the evidence that there is God, and how? Why it's actually the ball is in his yard, why he doesn't reveal himself to me?
No, that's a good question. Yeah, as we see in this Damodar Lila, he wants to see our endeavor. He wants to see, I mean, he didn't let himself bound until Yashoda was so exhausted that she was like sweating and she was really like almost giving up because she did put a lot of endeavor. So we could also ask ourselves, how much endeavor do we really put into the affair? Do we really going the extra mile? Are we really wanting to face God face to face? How much are we eager to really be in His personal presence? Are we actually prepared? If He would stand right next to us, would we be able to? What do I do with Him now? Yeah? These questions, they have to be carefully addressed. And also, it is the quality of our own affection. Do we really love Him the most? Or do we still love so many other things more than Him? And then He's giving us the other things until we develop the desire to only love Him. So then we have to check ourselves. Where do we stand accordingly? You had a question?
I had no question.
Oh yeah, you wanted to say something about it.
So I think that the problem with the question for evidence towards any kind of belief or away from any kind of belief is that you assume that if there is no evidence for God, so where is the evidence against anything? So when someone asks, where is the evidence for God?
Right.
Well, he has no evidence against it. Right. So I think it is a very, very extreme assumption to
good point,
decline anything if you have no evidence, because there is no evidence for anything.
Cool. Good point. And I mean, there's this very nice story, I guess you heard, when you have this little seed, and in this little seed there's this big banyan tree already in. So, who can make magic happen like that? Who can make magic happen to give us a body who's fully capable of personally interacting, loving affairs? There's so much magic around us we cannot explain. But we easily assume like, oh well, must be coincidence, must be by chance. But there's so much magic. If we actually carefully look in our lives and around us, we see indirectly already, maybe not directly, but we indirectly see the hand of God in every corner, basically. Cool. Yeah.
It's just a confusion.
It's on.
I've turned it off.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Okay. We always say that Krishna wants to experience the love, right? The love of devotee and everything. Mm. So he wants to experience the love of the mother, the friends, and everybody. So which came first? So if he created us and if this love first came among us and then he wants to experience that, or it's like a chicken and egg.
What is first then? Well, the living entity is Tadashya Shakti. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes this in Jivadharma. The living entity has no beginning. We are there. Let's put it that way. It's hard to understand, but we are there. And we are there since time immemorial. And, you know, since the living entity is Tatashta Shakti, which means in English the marginal energy. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes this like if you're on the shore, on the ocean, then there is a line on the shore where the waves sometimes cover the sand and sometimes it's not covered by water. You know, this thin line. And this is what is being described as Tatashta Shakti, that we can be covered by Mahamaya, and we can be covered by Yogamaya. It's our, in a way, decision to make. We have decided for this program, obviously, otherwise you wouldn't be here. And by desire we came in, so to say, and by desire we also be able to be covered by this internal potency. So, you know, there is, of course, there's no beginning to our existence, and there's also no beginning to love. So it's really hard to date back things like this, because we always want to find a starting point of something. It's very hard in that regard. The better understanding would be to just say, we in a way have to accept we have always been. Like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that the soul is eternal. There is no beginning, there's no end to this. And all of these warriors, as he says to Arjuna, you know, they always have. So don't you worry, he says to Arjuna, you can't kill really somebody, because all these warriors you see on the battlefield, they will never cease to exist. They will always be there. So it's hard to make these dates. Huh? We think of chronological, you know, progress in terms of there was a big bang and now we are here. But yeah, things go in cycles, again and again and again and again. And these cycles will go on eternally. There will always be a material realm where we can experience this reality, and there will always be a more spiritual reality where we can be as liberated souls. Like that. Does that answer your question, or was that a bit around it? So what was first? That was more your question. The love or we? Or we or the love?
Not like a question really, like, okay. No, nobody can answer this, but it's like a motivation, you can say.
Motivation.
Yeah, I mean, which inspired, God is inspired by this, or we are inspired
by God?
It's just a thought.
Yeah, it's a good thought. Yeah. So who loves whom first? Do we love him first, or he loves us first?
I mean, the concept of love, even in science, it is. You can talk, you can do race experiment, you can do anything you want, you can even create life, but then the spark of this love and hate and these emotions, is even science cannot explain it.
Right.
And that's the truth. And
in some way, you know, there are many such inconceivable, you know, thoughts we can't really make sense yet. So when Prabhupada, you know, he was talking to his disciples, and his disciples would pose questions like this, like, how is this in the spiritual world, and how is that in the spirit? How does the ladus taste in the spiritual world? And Prabhupada would say, just go and find out. So, in some way, we might not yet have the capacity to understand those, you know? They might be even sometimes contradictory, and we feel like, hey, if this is true, this can't be true, or the other way around. But those seemingly contradictory facts might come to a conclusion up on a higher plane, a synthesis. And then, so sometimes we just have to be patient that these things will be revealed to us like that. It's good. Nice thought. It's good keeping thoughts like this, eh? Because that keeps us alive spiritually. Anything else? Somebody. There's one more, maybe you get there.
So what?
Yeah, I have to switch on again, of course.
So what I have actually experienced that his energy system is more experiential, and if I bring down my logic and I focus on the devotion, bhakti yoga, so it's more accessible. So essentially the receptivity goes up, and I think like I feel the bliss and the fulfillment is there. So essentially what I'm trying to say is that if we can drop the logic and then focus on the devotion and bhakti, you know, you really feel the whole essence and the meaning of having Krishna within you.
A very good point. Thank you so much. Yeah, that's a good inspiration to stay practical. Huh? This is an experiential, this is an something we can experience. This is not just something which goes on in our minds, in our intelligence, but this is something we can practically realize in our lives. It's a very good point. Thank you. It's a good inspiration. Yeah, oh, he is one more. Let's say the last one, yeah? Because, oh yeah.
Good evening. Actually, this is not a question. This is another answer to one of the earlier questions, like, is there any evidence of God?
Okay.
It's actually according to Parashara Muni. Parashara Muni is father of Veda Vyasa. He told who is God. He just given some qualities who can be termed as a God.
Mm-hmm.
So they should be endowed with these six qualities. If he has, any person has six qualities, they can be termed as a God. So Lord Krishna has all these six qualities. That's why he's been termed as a God. That's what written in some of the scriptures which I have read. It's written by Prabhupada also. And these things are jnanam. So he should be with full of knowledge.
Mm.
And he should be vairagyam. Vairagyam means
renounced.
It's again, yes. Yes, and he should be full of wealth, Aishwarya, and Krishna is a king, so he has full, and he should be full of energy, and Lord Krishna has full of power and energy, we know. So like that, he has mentioned it. So
yes.
The person who has all these qualities, they can be termed as a God. That's
good.
What the definition given by our sages.
Yeah, that's true. Like the six opulences, exactly, beauty and also. One who can display all those six opulences in perfection can be called God. That's true. Good. So guys, then thank you so much. Thank you. It was a very good contribution. I guess now it's six and we are singing the song. Singing Dhammarasa.
Yeah. Yeah, wir machen Kurztür auf, wissen zur Seite und dann singen wir die Gora Rap.
The evil runs with Bhagavatam Kija, Bhagavatam Kija, Jai 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 Jai